My people, welcome to Rants and Randomness. I'm your host, Lovey Ajayi Jones, New York Times bestselling author, speaker, and professional troublemaker. And I'm here to share dope conversations that will give you something to think about, help you smile, and feel empowered to do what you feel compelled to do. So let's get into it. Today, I'm talking to my friend, Debbie Brown. Debbie is the Chief Impact Officer at Chopra Global. She's a wellness expert and author, a multimedia host, and a mom. Debbie's certified in primordial sound meditation, spiritual psychology, and energy healing. And she regularly teaches in LA, as well as leads retreats and events all over the world. After over a decade of working in hip hop entertainment as a radio and TV host, she answered her calling to become an advocate for women of color in the wellness space. Debbie's company, Karma Bliss, is devoted to spiritual connection meant to aid in the healing of generational trauma. Through her best-selling book, Crystal Bliss, and her podcast, Dropping Gems, Debbie's work is rooted in sharing tangible healing modalities with millennial and Generation Z women of color in support of a whole life enhancement. During our conversation, me and Debbie talk about a lot of things. We talk about her growing up. We talk about how little Debbie became this big Debbie. We talk about how she made this career transition and why she really doubles down on figuring out how to heal her inner child. Before we jump into the interview, I want to make sure the Rants fam knows that my new book, Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual, comes out on March 2nd, 2021, and it's available for pre-order right now. I wrote this book because everything great in my life has come as a result of me choosing to be a professional troublemaker, from feeling afraid and choosing to do the scary thing anyway. We don't need to make ourselves fearless. We need to learn to fight the fear and imposter syndrome that we feel and use it as fuel to become better versions of ourselves. The things that I'm talking about in this book will take you from being a fear hider to a fear fighter. And Lord knows, we got a lot of things that bring up fear right now. So, pre-order this book. I want to be a number one New York Times bestseller. Let's do it again. I need your help to do it. So go to professionaltroublemakerbook.com to learn more and to place an order. On Rants, my first thing that I always want to ask people as they're gracing me with their presence is, what did you want to be or do when you were growing up? What was little Debbie's dream?
God, I love that she asked me that question because I've been doing so much inner child work the last couple of years that I feel like I'm reconnecting to myself at different ages and understanding why certain callings were on my heart. So when I was a kid, my biggest dreams were in two categories that seemingly appeared to be very different, but ended up making sense. So I initially either wanted to be in broadcasting as a news anchor or as a radio personality, or I wanted to be a social worker or child psychologist, but I wanted both of them like equally bad. I went with the broadcaster for the first part of my life, but now I'm understanding why that deeper calling was on my karmic path and why, you know, both really appeal to me. It's that connection with voice. It's that storytelling. It's that curiosity that is available to you when you have like a journalistic life or a broadcasting life. And then it's like that deeper knowledge of self and also the kind of getting ahead of traumas or coming in, helping people with barriers to healing. And I was like, wow, I ended up kind of doing both and I didn't know how I would get here, but my soul always knew. So it's really interesting.
Come on, your soul always knew. So what was little Debbie like? Like 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old Debbie? What was that girl like?
I feel excited to talk about her now because I think for most of my adult life, I really was in deep judgment of her, which is something that we all kind of do. Like as we're adult women and we come into a space of really learning how to fully accept ourselves and love every facet of who we are, including the experiences sometimes that we never wanted, the experiences that we are perhaps bring up some pain, and just the shadow aspects of ourselves. We're all made of light and dark. I think oftentimes we just don't know that part of the tools for that healing and that acceptance come through revisiting how we felt about ourselves as children and what narratives we created about who we were or what we meant to the world or to the adults in our lives and how much that planted a seed that deeply informs and affects everything about our womanhood. So if you had asked me that question, even maybe 3 years ago, I was so holding on to my story and this false narrative that I created, that that little girl was somehow not loved enough, that she wasn't seen enough, that she was, you know, I had this vision in my head of being like a little Oliver Twist, like a little disheveled, like running around, no one did my hair, like I just wasn't, that there was something wrong with me because of how I interpreted my childhood story and how I interpreted the adults in my life as a kid. But if you ask me now how I feel about little Devi, and I'm looking back at her, and I did a lot of work with her, a lot of work with her over the years, but I feel so integrated with her. So when I look back at younger me, I'm able to see her radiant joy. I'm able to see how naturally wise and deep and intuitive she's always been. I'm able to see that she has always been so worthy and was so lovable and was silly and fun and like incredibly creative and always a lover, always someone that deeply loved, felt deeply, and was really curious about so much.
Wow. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm an LA native. I grew up, what's a little different about the typical LA story, I think sometimes, I grew up all over LA County, which is a unique experience. I think there's already, growing up in a place like LA or New York, there's already such a high volume of culture that you are exposed to really young. And also so many different like socioeconomic backgrounds. Like there's lots of contrast in every moment. And so that kind of develops your brain and your heart a little differently. But when I look at my particular path growing up in LA, I grew up all over LA County. So everywhere from, for anybody listening from California, you'll get this, but anywhere from starting out in South LA to being more like by the beach to then being in the IE, I lived in the San Gabriel Valley, lots and lots of really distinctly different cultures, all wrapped up with within kind of the same experience. So that's something I really love about my childhood.
So you were jumping around. So you were the kid that was usually outside.
No, sadly.
Really? Indoor kid here. So just so you know.
Were you? Oh my God.
Indoor kid. I was an indoor kid. I was definitely not the one riding bikes and jumping on trees. Yeah.
No, I wasn't. And for a lot of my childhood, I was a latchkey kid off and on. So my mom was a single parent. She worked really hard, but she was gone pretty much the entire day and a lot of the evening. So I was either in an after school program or I was at home trying to lay low so that the neighbors didn't know a kid was home by themselves.
Wow.
So there was a lot of that. Yeah, I was I love that you called it that. I've never heard it called that. I was definitely an indoor kid.
Indoor kid. Like
I don't have no scars on my legs. I wasn't doing much. Like
you know what? I do actually have scars on my legs because when I was outdoors, like in school, I would totally be like, one of my most interesting scars is on my knee, my right knee. It speaks very much to who I am today. I was six and I was like, I'm really fast. I bet I'm faster than you. And I challenged somebody to a race.
I can so visualize this happening right now.
I literally challenged somebody to a race and I was winning. And then I tripped over a rock, a sharp rock, and fell on the rock.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's how I got one of my biggest scars. But
oh, little Lovey, no.
Little Lovey was just a mess. Like,
I want to meet little Lovey. Like, I imagine you, and we've had, like, you know, our own conversations about, you know, childhood and our little selves, but it's like some of the stuff you shared with me. I'm like, she must have been such a powerful little girl.
Apparently she was, actually. That's what the reflection that I get back from everybody who was around. Like, I was very much a self-assured kid. I actually just found my report card from when I was 9.
Always.
Yo, the note from my teacher said she is gentle, respectful, and neat. Yes. Yes, I found the report card last week when I was just cleaning my office. And it just speaks to this little, like, I think you and I, little Debbie and little Lovey would have been friends.
They would have loved each other. We would have our little necklaces with like the little hearts.
With that hearts. Yes, I was all about it.
Piece them together.
And the indoor kidness all day. Me in the house. Once I'm in the house, I'm in the house. And I was a baby. So were you the only kid?
Yeah, only child, only child, which, you know, it's funny because people always have so much to say about only children, like, oh, they're so spoiled. That was not my reality. I was not spoiled at all. I wish I could go back in time and be spoiled. But it did make me someone that is like very, very comfortable with spending time with themselves and yes. someone that like naturally always knows how to self-investigate and self-regulate.
That's big, actually. The thing that people do say about only kids is that because you were the only one, you're usually self-centered and, you know, you don't have the perspective of what other people are thinking, but you are like, I'm literally the opposite of that.
Yeah. Well, it's a spectrum, right? Because it all mm-hmm. depends on who were your parents. So mm-hmm. everything about your child experience is crafted by the adults in your life and
correct.
How they help you to see the world. I think by having like a single mom who works so hard and also was like out of the house working so much, mm-hmm. that wasn't necessarily possible to be my reality versus maybe if I was in a two-parent household and then I'm lavished yeah. with attention,
yeah.
that would have been a little bit different. But no, listen, little baby Debbie, little only child Debbie, there was a big learning curve. There was a big, big, big learning curve.
I see why you're wise now. You basically were like, let me figure it out and get myself together at an early age.
Exactly that. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know what it is too? And I see the gift in this now. I used to probably see it as like a lacking part of my story, but now I see it as the deep gift as part of like my karmic path of purpose, like whatever yeah. I signed up for before I got here, whatever God wanted me to know while I was here. But I had to have those experiences. Like I had to cultivate and work on that skill set so I could arrive at this moment already having done 50,000 hours worth of self-introspection and self-regulation, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But I think for some of us that had, you know, even though there's no such thing as a traditional or a normal upbringing, but yeah. I think for those of us that had some variations that felt challenging, it's like I did realize very young that I was going to be in charge of my emotional development and that I was going to be in charge of showing up for myself and feeling safe and feeling seen and heard and fully supported with some things.
Yeah, that's significant. So where'd you go to high school?
So I went to high school in California. I went to two different high schools.
Okay.
And they were like more towards the IE, San Gabriel Valley area. And both were very different experiences, which was like the first high school I went to, my remembrance of it was, it just didn't seem like the adults cared as much. So there was like I remember being able to like, I was sneaking out of school constantly. I was, you know, definitely up to no good. Even though I was in honors programs, definitely up to no good. And then the second high school I went to was way more suburban. So there was like so much more parent involvement and it just seemed like such a night and day experience.
And were you popular? Were you part of any cliques? Who were you in high school?
I wouldn't say I was popular, but whatever that means, but I was someone that knew everybody. So mm-hmm. I had a lot of different friends. I always gravitated towards older. So like my freshman year, I was probably more so friends with like a lot of seniors and that kept going. But I would say, yeah, I wouldn't say like popular in that like cheerleader-esque kind of way, but
I knew
a lot of different people. I had people I was connected to that were probably part of all different kinds of cliques and different kinds of experiences. But I was also someone that even then like enjoyed time by myself. So I was kind of still a little more independent, I would say. Bad. And I always had different experiences too, because my mom was very like into culture and into exposing me. So, you know, a lot of like my summer breaks or winter breaks or our weekends were always spent in different areas with family friends or like wandering around museums or having, you know, different fun foodie experiences or just things that kind of expose you and get your mind kind of dreaming up a little bit bigger.
And at that point, what was your dream senior year of high school? Do you remember?
God.
Because college was about to start.
Yeah.
What did you decide that you were going to major in college?
I majored in broadcast journalism. I think by that time I was like, yeah, I want to work in the news. I want to do something with that. Even though I really didn't assert myself. myself a lot in high school. So I didn't join a lot of clubs. We didn't have a lot of money. So I couldn't really, there were a lot of programs I just couldn't be a part of because of like transportation or the fees. But I definitely didn't assert myself enough in high school. So I wasn't a part really of any programs. But I had figured out that I had a voice that people liked listening to, and I was able to say things in ways that caught people's attention. And so that further fed my dream of like making it on the radio one day or making it as an anchor one day. And so when I signed up for school, I majored in broadcast journalism.
What school did you go to?
I went to Cal State University, Northridge, which I know no one has ever heard of, but unless you're in LA, but
somebody's gonna come on your Instagram and be like, I went to Cal State Northridge. Why?
See, son, go Matadors.
So you actually started with that major and ended with that major?
Yeah, so funny enough, I started with that major. I was in the thick of it. In college, I joined a bunch of stuff. So I was like, I ran PR for our NAACP chapter there. And yes, we did like events. And, you know, I was a part of all different things. But I had this really beautiful opportunity to get this internship with a radio station in LA while I was still in college. And then I got a full-time position with that radio station before I finished. So I still have like a year left. But I started working. Wow. Looking back at it, it's kind of shocking at a pretty high level, really, really young in the exact field I wanted to be in.
And were you on the air?
I was eventually. Anybody listening that knows the radio hustle back in the day, I started out as an intern for two leading personalities, the Goodfellas, and I kind of started naturally implementing stuff into their show and like producing their show as an intern, which then led to like the PD saying, I want to give you a shot. And so he gave me my very first on-air opportunity was doing the weather and the traffic for the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
What?
So I was the person that would come on and I'd say, all right, today we'll have a high of 75 with a breeze. The 405 is a little crowded, but on the 101, you can expect, like, I was that person every morning.
Wow.
Which was amazing, but it also required me being at work every day at 4 a.m. Ooh. And I was still at that time, like struggling student. I still had another job. My car had broke down. I was catching the bus. It was a lot, but that's how I earned my stripes. And then slowly and surely, like I had this rapid ascension in the first few years of being able to get on air full time, becoming one of the youngest woman music directors in the country in a top 10 market and having, you know, access to all kind of different things at a very young time.
Give me that ascension. So you started as traffic and weather girl on the Steve Harvey Morning Show at 4 a.m. What was the next job?
Okay, so I started there and then I had a really unique experience. So I worked at a company that was a privately owned broadcasting company in LA. So I was in the number two market in the country with an insane amount of access, like 19 going to Oscar parties and doing this and doing that and interviewing, you know, people that I never even dreamed of, like very, very young. But at the same time, we were a privately owned station, so we didn't have any of the bells and whistles that any other radio station in LA had. So it quickly turned into maybe a little child labor. You know, I got that first opportunity. And then out of nowhere, it's like I'm promoted to also being the music director, the promotions director, and the community action director. So I lived at the station for at least 2 years. Like there would be times that I wouldn't make it home for like 3 to 4 days. And I would sleep on the filthy couch in one of the studios. And I would just keep a little bag with me that always had a toothbrush, that always had, you know, some new little stuff to switch into. But yeah, I was in full hustle from 18 to probably 27. I was in a relentless, nonstop hustle. And I didn't sleep for that entire 9 to 10 years at all.
Oh my God. So what kept you going during that time? Like, were you just like, I know this work is important or I'm really enjoying this? Because that's crazy. A decade of that much grinding and hustling is a lot.
It was a lot. I think because I did have so many rewards, like there was, even though a lot of the situations I was in were never ideal, I did have to deal with I was typically the only woman in every room I was ever in for those 10 years, with the exception of a few, you know, different experiences. But you had to stay so hyper vigilant, like all the time over yourself. And it really, I think I was really good at that. I was seeing results. I wasn't always treated the best, but I was seeing results and I was seeing continual forward motion. Mm-hmm. And so that's what really kept me going. It seemed like I had this, and this is really before I got fully connected to some of the things that I do now, some of like the manifestation and ritual I do now. But I think that was my first understanding that God had a bigger calling on my life, because no matter what happened, there was this divine grace always sewn into the fabric. And so I was kind of having, I was always prepared and I was always equipped for every room that I was in to show up in excellence. But God kind of gracefully ushered me into the majority of those rooms. And so even though I was grinding, there was still an ease about it. I never had any job I ever wanted, I got. I never really had to get into a space of competition. Like it was just like, okay, time to move her here, time to move her there. And I would just keep showing up in the best way that I could. But I think that's what helped. But I got over that fast and I will never do any of that again.
Bruh.
That grind life is not my life.
No, not at all. What is the biggest lesson do you think you learned during that time?
In retrospect, it taught me how to have the boundaries that I have now. It also filled me with a confidence, right? Like when you are in that kind of mode, you get this professional confidence that then informs the rest of the ways you can be excellent at whatever else you do. Mm-hmm. And so even though I was really tired, I was underpaid, I was, you know, it was tough, but it created in me the formula for excellence and success that I can now replicate, but without having to put as much into it. Once you learn how to show up, like once you learn how to deliver in a big way and how to sacrifice for the things that you want, it's just, you don't have to do it again because you learned it the first time and then you just apply.
And that's the value, the lesson, right? Because if you have to learn it again, that means you didn't learn the lesson you were supposed to learn the first time.
Yeah.
So you went from radio, hustle, and then you disappeared.
Yeah.
So talk about that. You basically opted out of this career that you had been in.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
So, you know, so I went from working in LA, working in radio in LA to then, and I had a bunch of other side stuff that I did too, that was entertainment related, to then, moving to New York where I worked for Sirius XM for a while. I worked for MTV and then moving to Houston where I worked for iHeartMedia. And in the midst of all that, I was still, because we are, you know, these multi-hyphenate, multi-dimensional beings,
right,
the personal side of me was also really beginning to do some of that deeper excavation of self. So I was really, especially as I had moved across two states completely by myself, not started over because I went there for a great job, but you know, you're rebuilding. And in that comes so much restlessness. In that comes so many opportunities to figure out who you are and what you're made of, because your distractions become fewer and the friendships and the connection are a little more sporadic. So I had already started a lot of my excavation, and around, I was probably 26, I had got shingles, which for those that don't know about shingles, you might have seen the commercials. It's something that lies dormant. It's a virus that lies dormant in your body when you have the chicken pox. So each one of us has it inside of us. But if you get it, you don't get it until you are usually in your 70s. It's something that usually happens when you're much older in life, but it is incredibly painful. Incredibly painful. You break out in these like rashes or hives. It felt like someone stabbing me with a ice pick that had been in the freezer, and it affects your nerves. It was really, really challenging. And when I went to the doctor, she was like, girl, you are 20, 25, 26. How? You're doing too much. Like this is 100% caused by stress. So that was my first real understanding of how we experience ourselves, how it manifests in our outward, sometimes as disease or sometimes how we choose to take up space in the world. And so that kind of made me start really slowing down and really looking at different things. And that's what eventually led me to my first meditation retreat, where I learned how to meditate. I learned how to be with myself. And that changed everything. Once that seed was planted inside of me, that there was more, that purpose was not my job title, that my mission in life, the calling on my life, had nothing to do with my job title, which I can't stress enough to people, because when God created us, there were no jobs, right? Like, when God created us, there was not career. There was not even language. And so this idea that our worth or our value of self would be wrapped up in something someone else created, in a title or in a check, you know, it's just understanding that was one of the greatest, greatest moments of my life. And from that, I just knew I was being called to share this information. And so when this kind of happened, this is right before the big bang of wellness happened that we see now. So there were not Instagram wellness Instagram pages. There were not like easy access to this stuff. Like, you really had to forage. Like, you had to already know you were on a spiritual path to gain access to any of the things that we can now scroll and see within seconds. So it was this kind of long journey, and I was having that dark night of the soul. I was really having a reckoning with myself. And when I noticed that people started calling my radio show to ask me questions about, why did I seem like I had so much peace? And what is meditation? I've never heard of that. Or, you know, I would have people, and this is before I was a mother and I was young, I was in my 20s, they'd call me to wish me happy Mother's Day on Mother's Day, my listeners. And I'd be like, I'm not a mom. And they're like, yeah, but you're kind of like our mom. Like, you're always looking out for us. Like, when I started really getting that feedback, I just knew I needed to share what I was learning. And I knew that the way I was doing radio at that time and what was accepted at that time was not enough for me. I did not want to talk about celebrities. I don't care. I did not want to be forced to make constant judgments about people every time I came to work. Like, it was exhausting my soul. And so I said, you know what? I think I'm done. I'll figure out another way to use my voice and use all these skills I've amassed in broadcasting. But right now I'm being called to deepen my knowledge of self and to share this work with other people. And I did not know what that would mean. I didn't know that it would eventually lead me to start my own business, build that business, then come aboard as, you know, a part of a global wellness company. I didn't know any of that would happen. Was not on my vision board.
Chief Impact Officer of the Chopra Institute, but continue, you know, slight work. Okay. I mean, slight work.
But yeah, but there was no blueprint for that at the time, especially not anything that I saw from a woman of color outside of the goats like Oprah and Iyanla. Like, I just didn't see it. I didn't know what it could be. But I did listen when I felt that call, and I trusted. And then, which is not to say it was easy. It's been a long, long journey, especially in the entrepreneurial world, but it all started making sense. And I just kept trusting that.
And literally today, here you are, CEO of Karma.
Chief Bliss. Impact Officer, yes.
You have two titles. You're still CEO of Karma Bliss.
Oh, yeah, CEO of Karma Bliss, sorry, yeah.
And then now you're a Chief Impact Officer.
Yes, at Chopra Global and the Chopra Daily Voice Global. Of Meditations on the Chopra app.
So that's Deepak Chopra, in case y'all missed that point.
Yes, y'all missed that point. The super goat.
When I tell you the super goat of wellness, your mentor is Deepak Chopra.
Yeah.
Which wild.
What a gift. It's so interesting, right? Because, oh, God is so dope. God is so dope. We don't always know where we're going, and we don't always know how things are going to pan out. When I first left my job in broadcasting, so many of my colleagues, because again, wellness did not exist in that way for our communities at that time. It just didn't. People didn't know about it. Everybody left. There were so many comments that made their way back to me about, yo, Debbie's lost it. She's off playing with rocks. What is going on? What are you going to do? And it's like, that's fine. Like, you can't see my vision because this isn't your life. This isn't your destiny. And some people have a limited view of who you can be because they're terrified to examine who they could be.
Ooh, come on. Drag us.
So it was just like, okay, like you think that that's cool. This is my life. If I fall, if I fail at this, that's fine too. Like it's a long road. We have to take risks with ourselves, especially when we feel called to. So all of that chatter was happening, right? But on the flip side of that, you know, I was still diligently doing my work. Like I'm also basically now when I look back, I have an Ivy League's education in wellness and well-being with the amount of study and the amount of programs that I've done over the last several years. But, you know, I didn't know I was going to end up working with Deepak. I knew that he had changed my life. I knew that his books had opened up a world I didn't know existed and taught me how to be with me and taught me what higher consciousness was and how to continue to grow in that and stand in that. And then I remember my friend Joy Sewing, who is the fashion editor at the Houston Chronicle, she did a piece on me. I'm looking at it right now. And it was like a feature of someone who was notable in this city. So I had a great radio show at the time. And the tagline of this feature was Tupac meets Deepak with LA style.
Yo, and this was years before your...
Yes, this was 2014. Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
And then it's like I look at other little knowings, right? Like other little moments like that where your life is just seasoned and peppered with things that are like foreboding of what, not foreboding, excuse me, but like a glimpse into the foreshadowing, a glimpse into what is manifesting, what's coming.
Yes.
And you just don't know at the time, but yeah. So then now full circle and it's like, what a gorgeous gift and opportunity to be on faculty and to be a change maker in this space of bringing this beautiful work to the world, which has been my soul's deepest desire for the last 10 years.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Rants fam, if you haven't joined us in Love Nation and become a Love Cousin yet, well, yo, what are you waiting for? Love Nation is my free community that is a safe space in the dumpster fire world. It is the place for the most thoughtful, funny, most chill deficient people on the interwebs. We're a community that comes together to make each other better with curated conversations, opportunities to connect, and challenges to help us transform and do better in every area of our lives. You gotta stop sitting on this and come into lovenation.com and get signed up. You can download the app in the App Store or on Android and come through. So become a love cousin. All right, back to the podcast. And you as a woman of color, as a Black woman in wellness, let's talk about the whiteness of wellness. Let's talk about it. Cause you know, you and I've already talked about it privately when we'd be like, girl.
And it's so funny because we went on one day and this is before... Like, I think right now there's been this boom in really speaking out against this, about the whiteness of wellness and the colonization of mental health spaces. Like, that's happened in the last couple of months. Yep. But, like, we were talking about this way before that kicked off.
Right.
And we were like, we should do a show about this.
Seriously. Because wellness is so white. You as a Black woman, as a woman who's not white and blonde and wearing Lululemon leggings.
Yeah.
Your work is significant because you stand out because that area is typically gentrified.
Yeah, it's, you know what, and you know what I've come to find, because a lot of the work that I do that I'm really interested in is specifically in the dissolving of trauma for women of color. Intergenerational trauma, we refer to it as generational trauma, but really coming in and teaching tangible tools for dissolving those barriers to healing that we have in front of us that are due to the very obvious systemic racism, capitalism, and also due to colonialization, and the profound effect, especially here in America, generationally, the burdens that have been placed on us in the path of forced resilience that Black women specifically, and also really all BIPOC women and people that have come to this country, like what we've experienced, it's this path of forced resilience. It's this path of servitude, this idea that love has to be earned, this idea that acceptance has to be earned. You know, these are all of the things that kept us out of those spaces. And so when I really think of those worlds, you know, obviously any program I ever did, and again, I can't stress this enough, this is before the big boom happened. So talk about being the only in the room.
Yeah.
Not only would I be the only person that looked like me, but I was the only person near my age. At that time, I was in my 20s. So there were no really millennial women, but no Black millennial women in any of these rooms, not one, not one event I went to, not a single certification program that I've ever done. And it was kind of like, okay, why is this? Okay, we understand economically, like there are some barriers in these programs. You know, I did have the vacation time to take off of work to do this. I did have the salary that allowed me to pay for these.
Yeah.
But that's not it, because I know a lot of women like me, you know, that have the same means and the same ends. So yeah. What else is it? And the more that I really investigated it, there was this spiritual narcissism that has existed within the wellness community. So there's the obvious barriers to healing that we face, like generational trauma and like complex post-traumatic stress disorder. But then there were these spiritually narcissistic glasses that it's easy to find yourself wearing. This is not I'm not condemning anyone. I'm not judging anyone. It's easy to wear these if you don't have experiences outside of your own, and if you don't have people near you that have other experiences. But in the spiritual communities, you know, it's often taught, which is very true, that we have this spiritual curriculum, that we have this life path that we signed up for before we got here to return to our wholeness, to learn whatever lessons were necessary. And so when you teach through those lenses, it's easy to discount all of the extra trauma that non-white people face, because you wrap it up into this thought process of, well, your soul signed up for that. Well, God must have wanted that for you as part of the way you needed to learn. So don't question it, just do it, right? So easy to say from a privileged standpoint. But if you're somebody that already has that spiritual curriculum that you came to earth to learn, and then you are also confronted with a barrage of post-traumatic stress, of complex post-traumatic stress, of systemic racism in every turn, of an ideology and a society that built into you this seed of worthlessness on top of the other challenging experiences that we all face in this human condition, well, you have to deepen your work as a teacher to be able to speak to that. You have to look to research and educate yourself on other experiences and other barriers so that you can show up in a way that allows for a safe and supportive environment for non-white people to enter into. Yes. And I think that that's been the deeper problem. It's not just that, you know, so many communities of color are deserts for many things, from technology to healthy food to wellness and well-being and mental health services, but it's also like so many of these spaces, these mainstream wellness spaces, they are deserts to deepening their own knowledge of spirituality and learning how to divinely translate it in a way that is able to reach more people that don't look like themselves.
Ooh, come on. I love that. And you talk about spiritual bypass and toxic positivity, and that's part of it. You know, you know, when you follow all these white wellness people, they're like, you can do this thing, and none of it is speaking to what you're saying. The trauma of being Black and being woman, being
broken
marginalized,
family structures,
all of the things and all of the arrows that we face. So you're in these rooms, you're seeing all these, this work that is not reflecting the real experience, and people are seeing wellness as like, oh, the crystals are woo woo woo.
Oh my gosh,
to the point of the Tupac plus Deepak of you. You are at the intersection of making it real. Like, as you talk about the crystals and the meditation and how this looks like, you are also a real person that shows what it looks like in practice.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
And that's significant. That's huge. Because a lot of people feel like wellness is outside of their reach. It's not accessible.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I think, Lovey, especially for our community, it's multiple things. So it's one, it not feeling organic and not feeling easily accessible, us not having backgrounds that necessarily peppered us with little glimpses of this world to make it feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there is a toxicity that an enmeshment that exists in a lot of our family structures and in a lot of our belief systems that makes you think you have to go through another person to get to God.
Come on.
And so I think as we expand and grow, and gratefully this is happening in such a big way for so many of us, but it's also understanding how much personal power we have. And I'm going to specifically speak to the woman of color as I'm saying this, but there is, God is inside of you now. Your wholeness already exists inside of you in this moment. It's about connecting to the tools that will help you to remember what you've forgotten. You know, we came to this earth whole and so worthy and so loved and cherished. And then slowly the human experience and condition that we did sign up for chiseled that out of us, right? Yeah. Or put up blockages that made us a little foggy in remembering how to travel back to that inner knowingness. And so, you know, I think for our communities, a big part of how we are able to connect more deeply to mental health, to our emotional health, to our wholeness is really taking a very focused and critical-eyed look at what parts of our beliefs and family structures, though well-intentioned, just don't serve us, or that we've outgrown, and then giving ourselves permission to chart our own path and our own course for what leads us to the better version of ourselves.
I just had to note that down. God is inside of you now. That is, I need people to really understand that and absorb that, because, oh man, that's powerful. I literally have to be like, let me put this down on my phone right now and just know that I have to call this out. And people need to hear this message, because we feel like we need somebody's help to find God all the time.
Right. And also it's like, and sometimes we may need our different teachers on the path to guide us in certain directions, but you can also take the training wheels off us at a certain point. Like, yes, if church is your jam, go. I love church. I do a lot of things, you know, but also you can be home and talk to God. Like, you can be home and have a thriving spiritual practice where he is deeply connected to your life. And though a lot of our leaders, and that goes not just for religious leaders, but thought leaders, there's all of us have access. All of us have access. You don't have to have a guru to grow. You don't have to have a pastor to grow. You don't have to have a thought leader to grow. Like, people can be catalysts for your own knowingness, because guess what? Them talking to you is them remembering the God in them. That's how they're able to show up with their message for you. And it's a valid message, but you have access to your own inner messaging that is equally as powerful, equally as intentional.
Listen, y'all, like, Debbie's literally who I go to whenever I'm like, I'm feeling stuck about something, and just having a conversation with her, it doesn't matter what it is about, I end up walking away with the clarity, because it's like, oh, she reminds me that we all have the ability to come up with our own solutions. We all, they're the guide in each of us is waiting to be listened to. And because we're going, we don't typically stop and say, okay, I hear it.
Because you know what too, Lovey? And first of all, girl, I'm so grateful for you. And thank you for that, because you are just everything. And I'm always like, I'm always sending Lovey like, I need business advice.
I'm like, call me, girl. Call me.
Can you teach me how to do this? No, but you know, and I think too, to the point of what you just said, the barrier to us remembering and having access to that divine GPS that leads us home is we are so rigid and so uncompromisingly hard on ourselves. So when we think to ourselves, because even in us saying that, right, there's somebody listening that says, well, some people can access the God in them, but why can't I? Something must be wrong with me. That's the inner story that they've told themselves already just from listening to that 30 seconds, right? And so the way to get to that inner God voice that all of us have inside of us that is equally powerful in each of us, it's learning how to be gentle with you and learning how to stop judging yourself and to forgive yourself in moments that you're in judgment of yourself. And I'll say, like, honestly, Lovey, like, full transparency, like, I've been on this path in a pretty deep way, a very magical, interesting way for the last probably 10 years, but also my whole life, just by nature of my childhood and, you know, some of the character traits that were forged in my karma over lifetimes. But the last couple of years is when I've done some of the most difficult, darkest, but powerful work on my spiritual growth. Even though I had tools, right? Even though I had thought I had done a certain amount of healing already, there's always more. There's always more opportunity to dissolve residues that we still have inside. And gentleness was a big part of it. You know, on an ego level, I could walk around saying like, man, I think I'm great. And I really meant it. I did think I'm great. I do think I'm great. I was looking at my life, you know, on paper, and it's like, damn, girl, you did this, you did this, you did this. You're a good person. You're friendly. You have lots of friends. Like, yeah, you're great. Okay. That's one layer, right? But was I being tender with myself? Was I being gentle with myself as I experienced moments that were confusing or hard? Was I judging myself for my reactions, or was I able to come into a space of compassion? That's what I've been cultivating the last few years. And that is what makes all the difference. That's what's given me access to God right now in a way that I never had him before, because it's so hard for him to talk to you when you are being so disrespectful to yourself in different ways. Like, he's just like, all right, I'm gonna fall back. When you're ready, I'm here. Right. Mm. But you have like, to really fully feel God's love, you have to love yourself more. Hmm. God speaks through the frequency of love. God is love. The language of God is love. And so when we are not in full love with ourselves, does he still love us? Of course. Right. But is he able to speak to us as clearly and as purposefully? He isn't. He isn't, because we have too many blockades up. We have too many systems in place that are going to disregard his word when it comes to us, you know, or say that we're not worthy of his word or his calling when it comes to us.
Ooh, this is why I'm always like, people need to go to therapy. People need to do all forms of wellness.
It's like, not one thing.
It's not one thing. Therapy is not going to fix it all. You also need to like pray and figure out what that looks like. Even if you don't believe in God, praying to something, just like, hey, speaking universe intention. Energy. Yeah. Speaking intention, trying to be positive to yourself. Cause to your point, we disrespect the hell out of ourselves. Like it's like this quote about how speak to yourself as you would speak to your best friend. Like, don't say the thing to yourself that you wouldn't say to somebody else, cause it wouldn't be kind.
Yeah.
We're constantly being unkind to ourselves, and we can't see past that to be able to actually be better.
Yeah. And even more than a best friend, you know, I'm going to give everybody a great hack right now that I have been doing myself for the last couple of years, and it's changed everything.
Yes.
You got to work on reparenting your inner self, because that's how you teach yourself kinder language. Mm-hmm. So talk to yourself, not just as your best friend, talk to yourself how you would any 3-year-old child. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, you don't have to know yourself or someone else to be kind. Like a 3-year-old child on the street, your natural go-to would be kindness, would be, yes. Hi child, I see you. You're worthy. Mm-hmm. You're enough. Like you're speaking life and you're so smart. You're so cute. Mm-hmm. Like that child could be a stranger, right? So cultivate the kind of language with you that you would with the same type of enthusiasm and depth of and joy,
grace
that you would a 3-year-old, and grace that you would a 3-year-old, and practice looking at your own 3-year-old. So a little reparenting work, you know, and this is full honesty, challenging at first, depending on what your story is and depending on how you look at your childhood, but get a picture of yourself. One that maybe makes you cringe a little bit. The first picture I got was a photo of myself as a little girl, and I was in deep judgment of this picture. My hair is disheveled. I felt like I was wearing, like, you know, these hand-me-down clothes, and all of it's fine, but the way that I had told myself I was as a child, or how much love I didn't think I had, I was in judgment of this little girl constantly. So there's no way that adult Devi could speak to herself with grace and joy and personal compassionate forgiveness if the little girl that is also a piece of who I am didn't get to get in on the action. So I got this gorgeous, now I see it as gorgeous, this gorgeous picture of younger me. I put it in a really beautiful frame, and I put it up where I would see it every day. And the first couple of weeks, it was challenging for me because I was going against every story I had ever said was true. Right? I was breaking through narratives and toxic traits of being with myself that I had taken on without realizing. So every time I walked by that picture, I was annoyed for the first few weeks. I was irritated. But I forced myself, knowing that this was the work my soul needed, I forced myself to do it anyway. And I would walk by, and at first it started with, "I love you, little girl." Right? Just like, "All right, I love you. You're cute." Now I see pictures of myself as a little girl, and I'm like, "Oh, beautiful, sacred child of God. I love you. Oh, you are so courageous. You're so brave. You're so wise. You've always known who you were. You've always been enough. You've always been deeply loved, held as precious and cherished." Like, I started deepening my own emotional language to use with her, with the words. Like, I sat and thought, like, what words do I want to feel and embody? Precious came up instantly. Cherished came up instantly. Divine, you know? And then speaking that to her as if it already is true, because it's always been true. I was the one that reframed the truth of my existence. The truth is, no matter what experience I had, I was always precious to God. I was always cherished. I was always worthy and always enough and always loved, period. That's the essence of why I was here. And so as I started doing more of that and really diligently doing it, it became such a joy for me, which then turned not just how I feel about little me into a joy, but it turned how I feel about me in all moments, no matter what chaos is happening in my life. And listen, there is some to joy, to being able to access joy always. And so what you do is you'd incrementally bump up the ages. So I started first with like a photo of me at 2, bumped it up to 5-year-old Debbie. After a certain amount of time, a few months later, it's 10-year-old Debbie, 15 Debbie, 20 Debbie. So I'm forgiving all the different stages of myself and releasing judgment of whoever I showed up at in that moment. Because the deeper truth is, no matter how I behaved in every moment, I did the best I could based on my level of consciousness then. And so I have to give myself grace and forgiveness for all moments.
Ah, listen, I'm like, that's beautiful. That is stunning. That is so incredible. Oh my God. I'm instantly like, okay, I have to go frame a picture of me.
Little, yes.
I have to do this work because we don't realize how much we judge who we used to be, who we are now. And it does start with us as young kids. It's funny, like ever since I started this podcast, me asking people, what did you want to be when you were growing up? I didn't realize, because I'm always interested in finding out who people have been since they were little, because I always picture small versions of everybody I'm looking at. Because I'm like, what would Debbie be like? Because I low-key, like, one of my dreams, honestly, is to have a cartoon about a little version of me.
Oh, my God.
I want, like, it's been my dream for years. Like,
oh,
I want
a cartoon. Happening.
Like, I'm like, I want a cartoon of little Lovey and her random rambunctious friends and all the random shenanigans they get into and why it never sticks, because they're really cute and just really smart. Because I'm so fascinated by how kids end up unlearning everything that's them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The world ends up telling kids that who you are is not good. So by the time you grow up, you've unlearned who you are. So then you're not trying to find them again. I'm like, what happens if we never have to unlearn who we are and we just stick to being that person? The work I've been doing in the last, and who I kind of represent in the world, is this person who shows up super true. And it's because I've insisted on not unlearning myself. I've insisted on always just not doubting who I am, because that means I can just be without constantly being like, are you good enough? Should you do this thing? Should you say this thing? So what happens when we all stop unlearning who we were when we were 5?
God, that's so beautiful. And I just, like, a reflection to you, it's like you're on such a divine path. Like, the way you show up in the world is with so much majesty, like so much power. Like, it's just, it's so beautiful to witness, Lovey, like, seriously, especially now that, like, I know you. And so, like, I also know how deeply authentic you are and how this is you in all moments. So for you to be able to gift us with sharing of yourself and your majesty and your fearlessness and your truth. Like, what a magical path that you have that you're just gracing us with and giving us.
That is the first time anybody has ever used the word majesty in talking about me, just so you know. Like, that really? That word hit me in the it hit me in the chest.
Yeah.
That is wow. Like, I'm stumped. Like, I'm stumped. I'm over here like, holy shit. Because
you were like we are ushering in a new era of womanhood. And it's like, is life crazy right now? Like, I mean, yes. Like,
yes.
None of us are going to get an A on the pandemic. Like, we are all challenged and struggling in a certain degree. But this is also such a time of illumination and awakening, but especially for the divine feminine, especially for that archetype of womanhood, right? Like, we in this moment are allowed to take up full space in a way that no other generation ever has had access to.
Yes.
And we're able to be multifaceted. We're able to be multidimensional. So it's like, when I see you, I see that radiance. I see that majesty while also being deeply in power and also being soft. It's like, you have your powerful presence on stage. You have your powerful tone and language as best-selling author. And then also we get to see these photos of you so soft in your wedding dress, like so loving, so elegant. Like, those photos of you, I was like, what? You're a whole sex symbol in these streets.
We got to give them layers.
Yes.
Just show up and just knock them off their feet, because we are multi-hyphenates. We can exhibit different spaces. We can be soft one day and show up hard the next. We can be powerful and then gentle. And what I really appreciate about you and the other women in my crew is that we all show what it looks like in different forms. Mm. We're all like perfectly ourselves in different forms, and being able to be in that orbit is so encouraging. It's so affirming to the spirit. And I am hoping that people are seeing us show up. They don't even know all the things we handle behind the scenes that we never talk about. They never know the struggles that we are in constantly.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're able to show up even in the tough days and just let people know sometimes, like, we have nothing for you. I have nothing for you today. It's powerful. And I'm really, it's a gift. It's like one of the gifts of my life to walk in this time and plane with you. Like, it is one of those acute realizations when you're living in a time that's so magical, and knowing that you are walking amongst saints and like deities is actually kind of wild.
Wow.
And I'm like, I thank God for always bringing the spirits to me who are supposed to walk alongside me to give me the power when I don't have my own power. And you're one of those people.
Ah, oh, thank you. I'm literally getting a little
misty. Look, I'm over here like, okay. All right, my eyes. You're just a blessing. And I, this conversation has energized my spirit in a way that you already know. Anytime you and I get off the phone, we're always like, Chad, listen, let me go conquer the world today.
I know.
Who needs some? I got some for you. now.
Yo, you are so rare. I'm so grateful for that reflection, because it's like literally the exact embodiment I see in you. Like, I see you and I'm just like, I think all of us, like, you know, and like our little group that we have, our little Sunday group, like, it's just like my jaw is always dropped. I'm just like, wow. Yeah. Wow, what a gift. And what a gift to find one another. Yeah. And for anybody listening, like, that, because I understand so often when we're on our paths of growth, depending on our backgrounds, depending on just what we have access to, it feels so alone and so defeating. But I just say, trust your path, because you will find your people. Like,
yes.
Each of us individually, like, I'm sure that we have had many moments where it was just like, does anybody else in the world think like I do? Or am I just going to be alone with my thoughts and playing a role of less, because I can't show up in these circles as my full self because they can't handle it? Mm. No, keep the authenticity of who you are, and then set the intention for God to connect you. Set that intention. If you can't even fathom it or see it based on where you're living or who you know, set the intention for God to guide you to your people. To the people that effortlessly get you, that see you and hear you, that you can reflect your light off of. Because I have had many moments in my life. Like, I've always been a really deeply life has been challenging for me from day one. There are very specific experiences in my life that have repeated very often until I was finally able to face them, that were profoundly painful and challenging. But even in that, and we all have our stories, because I still had this natural enthusiasm about me, people always assume that, oh, she's always happy, or she's always like the thing people used to tell me when I was younger, why are you always smiling? You always got a smile on your face, right? Because life had beaten joy out of so many people and they didn't know how to return to it. So seeing me was triggering for them, because then their expectation was, why do you have to get a life so easy? There's no way that you could have had the pain that I've had and still have joy. But that's one of God's, that's the divine grace he wove into my story, was still being able to access that personal enthusiasm for life, that, that optimism. And so I used to think, am I the only person like me? Will I ever find people that understand me? There have been very various moments of my life when I felt that way, where I could be my full self, where I didn't have to, code switch to unhealedness, right? Like where I was, I didn't have to downplay myself or my gifts, or I didn't have to speak with an essence of misery so that I could get along with everyone else in the conversation. Like now, and as conversations that you and I have, and you know, some of our circle has, it's like, I can get on a call and be like, oh God, this profound challenge is happening in my life, but wow, I feel joyful. God is still good. Look at what's showing up for me. Look at what I'm getting. Look at what I'm doing. Look how I feel about myself. Like, you know, so anybody listening that, that maybe is hearing me and Lovey, like, just reflect off of each other, that is available to you too, but you do have to make the conscious choice. You do have to shed what doesn't serve you, and you do have to believe in your own authenticity and truth, and really stand in that, whether other people are get it or not.
And that you are worthy of love in all forms, love, friendship, community. And actually, so before you go, for those who are listening, Debbie has a community. So if you're constantly looking like, where's my tribe of people who are also on this path of like, I got to get my life together, I got to do this inner work, Debbie recently created the Karma Gang.
Yes. Thanks to Lovey. Thanks to Lovey snatching me up. We did this divine timeout challenge that was right at the start of the pandemic. It was a 19-day guided self-care challenge. Because I'm very, the deepest part of my passion is teaching people self-care in real life. I'm not talking about, you know, the rainbows and the puppies and the bypassy positive talk. Like I'm talking about self-care in the sense of let's excavate. Let's pull up our demons and our dragons and look them in the eye and love ourselves deeply and experience all the facets of our stories and who we are and dissolve what doesn't serve us. Let's set healthy boundaries. Let's say no when we need to, right? Like that's the deeper parts of self-care, is like knowing you are love and you can demand your joy in your life. And so we did that challenge, and like Lovey did the challenge with me, and we were talking about it. And you just like filled me with so much life. Like you filled me to the brim with your reflection of what you saw that I was doing. And you were like, girl, let me connect you. Let me connect you with my people so they can show you how to do this, because it's time. You need to do this now. And so because of Lovey, we started Karma Gang, which is karmagang.org. And we have a gorgeous community there. We have two different tiers. So if you want to come and have a love fest and be connected to incredible other women who are on this path and filling one another with positivity, we also have activities and we have different resources that I share on there. You can join that for free. And then we have a second tier where we do some of the deep dive. So if you feel so called, that's available to you too, if you're ready for the path of mastery.
Yes. So those of you who are already in Love Nation, it's the same type of platform. Karma Gang, you join in there. Look, pick the one that you think is worth. And I actually, honestly, I want to cue up my audience to this. People are not used to spending money on stuff because now everybody's like throwing out content out here. Put your money in the spaces that have, that will fill you. Put your money and invest your money in the people who show up authentically. So I will say, spend the money to actually join the paid group in Karma Gang and do the work. Like, do the work. That is significant and it's important. And I think people need to be queued up, because right now everybody's like, I don't know what to trust. Trust Devi. All right. Trust Devi. Because I trust Devi. Like, I vouch for the people who I know that I would go to the ends of the earth for. She's one of them. So I'm glad you did Karma Gang.
Thank you. You're amazing. Thank you. Thank you.
Friend, I love you.
And I love you.
You are a constant gift. And this conversation has blessed my spirit. And I'm just so excited to just be on this path with you.
What a profound joy and blessing it is to know you and to be connected in this lifetime, to get to do this work together in this lifetime. I love you, Lovey. Thank you.
We're blessed. We are so blessed. Love you, friend. And
love you.
We'll talk more. Yo, Devi is just this magical unicorn. And I'm so glad that she was on to share her noir pixie dust with y'all. She's constantly blessing my life with all types of like ancestral wisdom. You know, one of my favorite quotes from this interview is about how God is inside of you now. And I hope you hold on to that. Y'all be sure to follow Devi Brown on social media. She is at DeviBrown at Devi Brown on Instagram. And check out her podcast. She has one. It's called Dropping Gems. Could not be more accurate. All she does is drop gems, okay? And also, check out Karma Gang. It is worth your investment. Go in there, do some work, have somebody hold you accountable to some well-being. Be around people who are committed to being elevated versions of themselves. And just support whatever Devi's up to. If you loved what she said on this podcast, please go show her and shower her with love all over her social media. Let her know that the Rance fam heard her and are holding space for her and are encouraging her and affirming her dopeness, all right? Okay, so much love to Chicago Recording Company, who I've been partnering with from the start of this podcast, and they allow me to bring the radio voice to y'all, so much love to them. Thank you for listening to Rants and Randomness. One quick thing you could do to help new listeners find our show is first to make sure you're subscribed to Rants and Randomness in your podcast platform of choice. Second, make sure you rate the show and leave a comment with a review, whether you're listening in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. And finally, please share those insights and mic drop moments on social media and be sure to tag us. We are at Rants and Randomness on Instagram and Rants Randomness on Twitter. No ands there. As always, you can follow me on social media. I am at Lovey everywhere. See you on the next episode.